So, welcome to the Small Device C compiler. Talks are short, so I'll try to fit in just the basic stuff. I'll start with a quick introduction on what the Small Device C compiler is. Then I talk about the architectures we target, and then just a little bit of what the future hopefully brings for the Small Device C compiler. Okay, so SDCC is, as the name says, a C compiler. It tries to support C standards, in particular ISO C 90, 99, 11, and 23. It's nearly always used as a freestanding implementation. The only exception I know of is that FuzzX, an operating system for some 8-bit systems, use it as a part of a hosted implementation. Now, those familiar with the C standard know that in a freestanding implementation, you are more restricted, in particular in features from the standard library set you can use, because, well, if on your device there's no file system, there's no point in using any standard library functions trying to open, read, or write files. There are some supporting tools apart from the compiler itself, in particular assemblers, a linker, and a simulator. The simulators are usually kind of cycle accurate. We mostly use them for our regression testing internally, but they are also usable by end users who want to run their programs on a simulator rather than on real hardware. It works on many host systems. Most popular would be Linux and Windows, but it works fine on FreeBSD and so on. We target various 8-bit architectures, probably more than any other compiler does, and we have some unusual optimizations that do make sense on these targets, where you really have very little memory and where both optimizing for code size and for memory use are very important and often more important than optimizing for speed. Our user base consists mostly of developers targeting embedded systems. I guess they make about 2/3 of SDCC users, and the rest are retro gaming and retro computing enthusiasts, because we also support various older 8-bit architectures. They're similar enough to modern 8-bit microcontrollers that it makes sense to have them all in the same compiler, and many high-level optimizations can be shared. And I believe that the user base in the end benefits of having both these groups represented, because sometimes one group or the other is more eager to try some new feature, which of course helps us finding all the bugs and corner cases and iron out everything, while then more conservative users that want to wait for longer then get in a more polished state. Our latest release was at the end of January, which is very recently. Typically we do one release per year. So the project is hosted at SourceForge. We have our issue trackers there. We have mailing lists for communication. We use a subversion repository. We use the wiki for some documentation outside the manual. And we have a compile farm for nightly regression testing, which means every night on many different host systems, both in terms of operating system and underlying architecture, the latest SDCC from Drunk is built and then runs all the regression tests, meaning compiling a lot of tests, running them on the simulators to see if the results are what they should be. There's something between 10 or 20,000 tests that are executed that way, and it also incorporates a large part of the GCC test suite. A quick comparison to more known compilers. We don't see ourselves as a competitor to GCC or LLVM, so the versus up there is just for a comparison. Now, we specialize in targets that are hard to support in GCC and LLVM. For GCC or LLVM, you typically want some RISC-like architecture, many registers, uniform instruction set. Then you can use a Chitin-style register allocator, and that's efficient, and everything is nice. the typical 8-bit architecture is not like that. If you want to get into the compilers, as a compiler developer, our learning curve tends to be less steep than GCC. Our internal interfaces tend to be more stable than LLVM, which for some people is also a nice feature. Talking about the recent release, our main improvements were definitely in the last 2 years in standard compliance, in particular ISO C23 support. This was partially funded as a project by the Prototype Fund from the German Ministry of Education and Research, and improvements and optimizations, in particular generalized constant propagation to allow us to narrow variables. Yeah? If people use an int as a loop counter, that's typically a waste of memory on an 8-bit target if that loop doesn't really need the 16 bits that an int has on those targets. And the work in optimizations was partially founded by NLNet via their NGI0 initiative. And we also got two new ports, namely one for the WDC6502 and one for the ASCII R800. So one is a MOS6500 derivative and the other is a Z80 derivative. Okay, let's get to the ports. The SDM8 port is our best one because we generate really good code for the STM8. It's the currently most advanced port. It has all the bells, whistles, and great features. We do very well compared with those non-free compilers. Unfortunately, recently this architecture has become not recommended for new devices. The manufacturer tries to move their customers to ARM. But just to illustrate how we do versus the three other compilers, which are all non-free, in terms of benchmark scores, well, we generate the fastest code essentially, except for Whetstone, which is a floating point benchmark that we didn't put as much emphasis on. And we also generate reasonably small code, also for all of these benchmarks here. This is with the current release in January versus the current versions of these non-free compilers. Now our oldest port is for the 8051 and its derivatives. That's an ancient microcontroller architecture that Intel introduced long, long ago and abandoned long, long ago. And there's still many dozens of manufacturers that make compatible devices. It's a very, very popular common microcontroller architecture. It's not as nice as STM8. It was the first supported architecture in SDCC, but in the recent years it has fallen a bit behind. New features that got added for other architectures didn't always get added to 8051. And all those many devices made by different manufacturers are also often slightly different, in particular in new features like additional data pointer registers, which are used in different ways. We have support for the HCC8 and SC8. It's current microcontroller architecture by NXP. The problem is there's not really much of a free open source community around this architecture. There's individual bits here and there where someone wrote some free software for it, but in general it seems a typical sentiment by developers of SC08 programs as well. We get at no monetary cost, we get the development environment for the manufacturer. Why should we try something else? And sometimes they complain a bit when the manufacturer drops support for an older device. There's PDORC, a Taiwanese company that makes billions of microcontrollers each year that are not that expensive. They were not really meant to be programmed in C, but we still managed to support them. At least three of the four sub-architectures that exist we already support. The largest one, the PDKSA, is not yet supported. One thing interesting about these is that they have hardware multithreading support, which we currently don't support. What we can do is write a C program, run it on one core, and on the other cores run a sampler software. There's the microchip PIC. Those used to be very popular because they were cheap. The ports are currently unmaintained, but we still get sometimes contributions from users with patches, and it's not like they're completely abandoned. Maybe sometime a maintainer will step up out of these user contributions. Okay, now we get to the architectures relevant to the retro computing people. These are a large number of Z80 derived architectures. The SM83 might be known to most people here as a CPU from the Game Boy, even though it's also found in some other Japanese appliances and TV remotes. And then we have the MOS 6502 and its derivatives, which don't even fit on the line anymore. They're found in older embedded systems, especially those R2K to R3KA. Those are the rabbits. They were very early IoT devices because they are kind of enhanced Z80 with Ethernet or Wi-Fi on support on the chip. But these days, these architectures are relevant to the retro computing community, which often doesn't use SDCs directly, but instead via downstream projects that package SDCC together with libraries for certain devices that use these things like video game consoles or historic computer systems. Now, what will the future look like for SDCC? We're definitely facing a problem at the moment because the STM8, the architecture for which we're really doing really great, and those rabbit devices that I mentioned for the retro, on the retro computing side, are both not recommended for new devices anymore. Meaning that the architectures for which we are really, at the architectures where we really do great as a compiler, are about to be phased out. We will keep supporting them, probably unlike many of those commercial compilers. I mean, two of the three commercial compilers for the STM8 haven't even seen any update for the last 2 years. But to stay relevant for current embedded systems, we need to try something else. And basically, this is the idea. The main thing is putting the focus on the MCS 51, so the 8051 again. It's an ancient architecture. It's not exactly the nicest architecture. But due to the large number of hardware vendors, it's not likely to die anytime soon. And looking at the reasons why users choose non-free compilers versus SDCC for the 8051, the main reason is definitely that the main non-free compiler for this architecture can optimize better for code size. So this slide about the future is basically a very rough outline for plans for the next 2 years. And in generating better code in the MCS 51 port is definitely something that we want to do. We will look a little bit in the S08, but due to the lack of community behind it, there's probably not that much that can be done. We still try to keep the S08 core support up to the other ports feature-wise, even if maybe not optimization-wise and code generation-wise. For the Pedorg things, it would be nice to be able to support the multithreading better and also support the one remaining sub-architecture. And then there's this F8 thing, which is basically a very early project to maybe come up with our own architecture. I've worked on the compiler for a long, long time, and very often there was a feeling this could have been done a little bit better in this architecture, or that could have been done a bit better. It would have made it a much better target for C compilers. Yeah, the STM8, for example, is a really good architecture. It has things like stack pointer relative addressing mode. That's something that you really want for local variables in C, because then you want them on the stack, so you have full re-entrancy, standard compliance, everything. But it has very few registers. The Z80 has more registers, but the stack access is a little bit less efficient because you have to set up a frame pointer, go through index registers, and so on. Pedorg things have great multithreading, but they don't have the necessary instruction to support good C standard atomics to communicate between the cores. And out of all those lessons basically learned from other architectures, the F8 is kind of a project to come up with an architecture that, to say it in some way, should become, if it succeeds, something for the 8-bit world, something like RISC-V is for the rest of the world. And I see that the time is up. Questions?
Thanks for the talk. Can you maybe give some hints about the internals of the compiler?
The internals of the compiler, okay. We have a classic Lexiac. Ah, sorry, you didn't find...
Yeah, I just want to say, if you are using an intermediate representation, and maybe also the simulator, does the simulator, since it has to support many architecture, uses an intermediate representation? I would be curious about that.
Okay, so the front end is a classic Lexiac parser. We have an abstract that gets us, and then we get from that an abstract syntax tree that gets converted into the I code, which is basically a three address code. This then gets annotated with some extra information, such as a register allocation, and then in the individual backends, this I code gets transformed into a sampler code. The sampler code then goes through a peephole optimizer, and that gets then written out to the linker. The simulators, well, that's not my area of expertise. Daniel Trotos is definitely doing most of the work on that part. They're written in C++. They're using those classes and stuff to abstract things away. But I don't think there's any intermediate representation in the simulator because they need to be fast. Yeah, we want to run tens of thousands of tests for every architecture that we support every night. So performance is definitely a goal for the simulators.
Any more questions?
So you mentioned code size as one of the areas where SDCC lags behind like the proprietary compilers from the vendors. Like, of what kind of factor are we talking about, and are you doing regular statistics about the code size of SDCC, like in terms of different versions and so on?
Yes, we are tracking this throughout versions. We have graphs, and we are not lacking in code size in general compared to other compilers. I mean, we're doing okay for the SCM8. Yeah? Sure, Resonance generates smaller code, but Resonance is in every other way the worst compiler for the SCM8 around these days. I mean, they don't even support C90, and their code is very slow. It's specifically for the 8051 backend that Kyle generates more compact code.
I need to just to preface my question that saying that I only experienced SDCC through the downstream projects, and I've begun actually using it in great part thanks to your talk a couple of years ago. But I have noticed that the compilation step takes a lot longer than other compilers would. I suppose it's optimizing and evaluating. Why so, and what would help it? More faster disk, more RAM, faster processor? What would help the completion times drop a bit?
This depends on the backend. Most backends use what we call the new register allocator, which definitely was the key to being able to compete this well with those other compilers and generating faster code and also being competitive in code size. 8051 does not yet. But for the Z80, this register allocator is used. It has a parameter, max allox per node. That you can set to tell the register allocator how many different possibilities to consider at each node of an internal representation. The default value is 3,000. If you set it lower, you get less optimization, lower RAM usage, faster compilation. But there's people that set this thing to 1,000,000 and let their program that in the end fits into 8 kilobytes compile for half an hour, but they really want it optimized as well as it's possible. So yes, the most of the compilation time is spent in the register allocator and the peephole optimizer. For the parts that have the new register allocator, definitely the register allocator, typically more than the peephole optimizer. And one interesting thing is this can become provably optimal. If you also add the F-verbose ASM, You get comments in the assembler that tell you once if the register allocator found a provably optimal assignment per function.
Okay, I think that's all we have time for the questions. So just want to say, wish you thank you very much for the fascinating talk on comparison.